He slides his fingers into my hair, tugging my head back. With an agonized sigh, he presses his warm lips against mine, and I come alive with light and warmth. My breasts brush against his powerful chest, and a deep ache fills my core. As his tongue sweeps against mine, I run a hand down his hard abs toward the waistband of his trousers. He moans. He kisses me deeply, with sensual strokes of his tongue, until I want to rip his clothes off him. One hand is fisted into my hair, the other gently wrapped around my waist, like he's still afraid of breaking me. Until that hand shifts and traces slowly up my spine. He nips at my lower lip, then pulls away for a moment, his expression searing. He kisses my throat, and my head falls back, my thighs clenching. Lightning flashes in the stone bathroom, and a deafening crack of thunder rumbles through the walls. Raphael pulls his lips from my throat and searches my eyes. When we kissed, I tasted whiskey on his tongue. A little tendril of uncertainty coils through me. He presses his forehead against mine, his fingers still tangled in my hair, and lets out another agonized sigh. Nia. My name is a whisper. His throat bobs.
I should not be doing this. Avalon Tower cannot lose you.
When he meets my gaze again, his silver eyes pierce me.
But I need to keep you safe. You'll stay in my room tonight. You can have the bed.
His gaze sweeps down my body.
I need you to get dressed, though. Now, before I forget what the fuck I'm doing.
My heart twists as I pull up the towel around myself. There it is again. The retreat. But he's also right. Tana told me that if I get kicked out, everyone will die. Avalon Tower has no tolerance for romantic relationships, and I don't want to ruin things for Raphael either. The stakes are too high to risk it. I can't erase the image of the encroaching darkness from my mind. That little drop of water being swallowed by shadows. I twist the towel very tightly around myself. Just give me a minute. He nods.
Of course. The assassin clearly went after you because you're a sentinel. I'm going to make sure our other sentinel is safe.
He looks dazed.
I'm just going to get rid of the body first.
I lie there, wrapped in Raphael's blankets, while he lights the candles around his room. They glow with warmth over neatly stacked bookshelves, the light gleaming off gold-lettered spines. His bed sheets smell clean and faintly of soap. Everything in his room is in its place. His desk is tidy, his bookshelves organized, the flagstone floor completely clean. Rain still patters down his tower windows, sliding down the glass panes and little rivers. I shrug off the blanket and stand. I cross to the window and I peer outside. Lights glow in the distant timber houses of Camelot. Far below his tower room, a stone bridge spans a cobbled street, bathed amber in the glow of gas lamps. I watch as a cloaked woman crosses the bridge in the rain. Two large men with swords flank her. When she glances up at me, I see her bright red hair, the color of cherries. I've seen her before, looking at me. She blinks up at the tower, and something about her tugs at me, as if there's a thin thread connecting us. Who's that? I ask. Raphael peers through the rain-slicked window.
Ah, you felt it, didn't you? That's the other sentinel. Her name is Naveen.
Oberon wouldn't have sent a veil mage as an assassin for just anyone.
He must have gone for our sentinels. That's why I assigned her these guards.
I wince. I'm not sure the assassin went for me because I'm a sentinel. But I'm not supposed to tell him about Tana's prophecy. That they're probably not after Naveen at all. They're after me because I'm what Tana calls the Lady of the Lake.
After tonight, he goes on, I'll make sure your door has guards. You'll be well protected.
I stare at him as he unbuttons his white shirt. Gods, his body is perfect, and the candlelight sculpts every one of his chiseled muscles. He grabs a blanket off his bed and carries it over to a red velvet chaise lounge beneath a window. He curls up, his pale eyes flicking to me. We're not touching. We're across the room from each other. I didn't really know if this is a whiskey-induced mistake, but I feel comfortable with him. He flashes me a smile, a full, genuine smile that I've never seen on him before. I won't be getting over that smile ever.
Good night, Pixie.
My eyes drift closed to the sound of the rain. But just as I'm relaxing, a horrible thought comes to me.
The moment I fall asleep, the dream stalker could turn up again. Raphael, I ask, do you know any way to protect yourself against the dream stalker's magic? He shakes his head.
As far as I know, the only way is to never attract his attention.
Well, fuck. Chapter 32. It's been nearly a month since the assassination attempt, and I've been haunted by something other than the Dream Stalker. Anxiety about the culling. And right now, it all begins. 2 weeks of trials, tests, and sleeplessness. Success and failure, life and death. All options are on the table. Even though I'm just a spectator today, my body is tense. Summer clouds slide over the sun, and the humid breeze kisses my skin. The stone benches of Camelot's ancient arena, Knight Riding Court, are packed. Once, this was the site of deadly jousting matches. Bashed skulls, pierced helmets, severed limbs. Let's hope the first round of the trial by combat isn't quite so violent as it was in Arthur's day. Out of all four trials I will face, the only one I'm not worried about is the written test tomorrow. I've got that nailed. But the other three scare the shit out of me. In just a few days, I have to pass something called the Shadow Trial, which is a total mystery that changes year to year. Then, my own combat trial here in the arena 1 week from today. And finally, the Magic Trial, where I have to prove my Sentinel abilities, the ones I still haven't fully mastered. But it's not just me who's worried. I sense the tension in the air concerning what's about to unfold. I take a deep breath. Lightning spears the sky, and a few people around me jump. I pull my jacket snugly around me. Thunder rumbles, and a light rain spatters against my face. As much as I hate it, the rainy weather reminds me of sleeping in Raphael's bed with the rain pattering on the window. Hugging myself tightly, I glance back at him sitting behind me. His pale eyes are focused straight ahead, and I'm not sure he even realizes I'm here. Since the night of the assassin attack, he's been nothing but formal and guarded. His old emotional restraint has returned. Perhaps he only lets down his guard when the alcohol is flowing. I turn to the arena, my skin prickling with the apprehension thickening the air. Are any of us really prepared for this? Across the sandy tilt yard, the three trial judges wait in an elevated, covered pavilion. They sit in large wooden chairs that might as well be thrones. Vivienne, Rythe, and Amon, garbed in long, embroidered robes of blue and silver that remind me of Merlin. Rythe sits in the middle, his golden torque flashing as another bolt lights the sky. In just a few minutes, two cadets will battle one another, and their performance will help determine the torque they earn in the end. Will they become knights with gold or silver torques? Squires with brass or copper? Or will they fail so miserably, they'll get tin, meaning they're culled? Gods, I can hardly breathe, Serana mutters by my side. The rain starts to pick up, dampening my hair and jacket.
I've given up on breathing altogether, Darius says.
He may be having a panic attack, but the man's silver eyeliner is impeccable.
My trial by combat is tomorrow. Have you heard that sometimes people die?
My stomach clenches. I'm sure not very often, I say. They're not going to want to kill their graduating class, right? We stare ahead at the arena. Slowly, the first two cadets march in. There's Horatio, Tarquin's pink-cheeked lapdog, and Nolan, Darius's crush. Both of them are ridiculously tall, their shirts wet with rain. Horatio carries an enormous sword, its blade dulled. Nolan has a rapier in one hand, a stiletto in the other. His long brown hair drapes down his broad back.
Smash him, Horatio,
Tarquin yells from the crowd.
Go on, Nolan, Darius shouts. You've got this.
He turns to us, muttering, Gods, he's hot. Cheers erupt through the crowd until Rythe stands and raises his hand.
Wait for the command to begin.
Silence settles. My heart is thudding, almost as if I'm standing in the trial ring myself. Rythe seems to be drawing out the waiting, and a nervous hush settles over the arena. The long, silent wait feels excruciating, and my chest muscles tighten. I can almost imagine myself out there on the dirt, facing off against one of the better-trained cadets, waiting for the moment when a sword might pierce my gut, an experience I have no desire to repeat. As I hug myself in the rain, Tana's warning about the trials still rings in my mind. Death hunts you.
During the trials, the darkness will start to envelop you. If you don't survive, we all die.
The rain is pounding down now, turning the arena into mud. Without waiting for the command to start, Nolan lunges, his rapier poking Horatio's shoulder. The crowd starts roaring, and I realize I'm screaming as well, cheering for Nolan. His attack was sharp, seizing the element of surprise. Horatio wasn't expecting that. I have a good feeling about Nolan today.
Begin, Vivian shouts, even though they've already started.
MI-13 spies aren't honorable. We fight dirty, and we take pride in it. Better to be cunning and alive. I suspect Nolan will actually earn a point for attacking before the trial formally began.
Horatio swings, and Nolan barely dodges, rolling aside in the mud.
I expected Horatio to take a second to recover, since his sword is huge and cumbersome. But when Nolan thrusts again, Horatio easily parries him with his blade, then swings and hits Nolan's foot. With a sinking feeling, I realize that Horatio is much stronger and faster than he appears. He can easily handle that enormous hunk of metal, swinging it as if it weighs nothing. God damn it.
Nolan now seems more cautious, eyeing Horatio carefully.
He jumps back as Horatio swings again, then rolls to avoid another swing. He's buying time, trying to exhaust his opponent.
Come on, Nolan, Darius cheers.
I glance across the yard at the judges. Their faces are impassive and show nothing. The only sign of emotion is the tightness in Vivian's lips. I recognize that expression from the hours upon hours I've spent with her in training, and I already know what she's thinking. Nolan won't be able to exhaust Horatio. She's frustrated with his decisions. Horatio looks like a lumbering idiot, but he's tireless. He can spar for hours. I've seen him do it. Nolan should know that. He should have paid attention. When possible, we're expected to know everything we can about an opponent. And in this case, that includes the other cadets. Sure enough, Horatio keeps swinging, not even breaking a sweat. His swings seem clumsy, but I can see his footwork, his poise. He's trying to fool Nolan, make him think that he's a mindless brute. Horatio, I think, is much cleverer than he lets on. Nolan finally parries one of Horatio's swings, then, with an elegant twist, thrusts forward with his stiletto. Horatio stumbles back.
Yes, go Nolan!
Serana screams. No, I mutter, don't fall for it. But he does. Emboldened by Horatio's stumble, he moves forward, thrusting directly at Horatio's unprotected chest. Horatio's sword blocks it. Quick as lightning, Horatio tears Nolan's rapier from his hand, sending it flying. Another swing smashes into Nolan's arm. The blade is dull, but it's still heavy, and Nolan screams in pain, an agonized animal screech. And I wonder how badly that arm is broken. Tarquin and his friends are now the ones cheering, wild with victory. Darius, Tana, and I can only watch in silence. I glance at the judges, wondering when they'll call an end to it. Quite clearly, Nolan can no longer fight. From what I can tell, Vivian and Amon seem to be arguing with Rythe. From here, I have no clue what they're saying. Nolan's arm is hanging limply by his side. All he has is his stiletto, held in his left hand, his non-dominant hand. If he could, this would be the time to surrender. But surrendering in a trial of combat means failure. The worst thing an undercover agent can do is surrender, because if the Fae take us prisoner, they will torture us until they've extracted every last bit of damaging information from our minds. An agent is expected to fight to the death, or in this case, until the judges call it. Which they aren't. They could, but they don't seem to want to. Rythe stands with his arms folded, shaking his head. Vivian is screaming at him, red-faced. Maybe she wants to call it. And then Horatio goes for Nolan. Not just one swing, but a series of punishing lashes, swiftly and expertly delivered. Hitting his chest, his leg, his broken arm. Nolan stumbles back and collapses. Rythe finally nods, and Vivian turns toward the combatants. And Horatio smashes his heavy blade into Nolan's head. Vivian stares, stone-faced. Darius leaps up and runs through the crowd, trying to get to his friend. The tower's doctor is already there, kneeling by Nolan, trying to heal him. But there's too much blood. And Nolan's eyes are gazing sightlessly at the sky. Horatio stares down at him, his face expressionless.
Oh, gods,
Serana mumbles. And now the doctor shakes his head, and Darius stands over his friend's body, crying. He just killed him, I say. Nolan was done. It was obvious. There was no reason to do it. He quite clearly could have won the trial without the final blow.
Serana stares straight ahead. They should have stopped the fight.
Vivienne and Amon wanted to, I say. Rhythe didn't agree. What's the point of allowing cadets to die?
There's no point, Serana says.
But it happens. It's brutal, but Horatio demonstrated that he fights well. He'll get high marks for this trial.
Rhythe slaps Horatio on the shoulder, and Horatio has a tiny smile on his ruddy face.
When Tana told me the darkness was coming for me during the trials, I had imagined another assassination attempt. I hadn't really pictured dying at the hands of a fellow cadet.
Chapter 33. On the night of the Shadow Trial, I stand with the other cadets in a ruined church not far from the Tower of London. The written test a couple of days ago was easy enough, but I have no clue what's in store for tonight, only that it's taking place outside. With no roof above, moonlight washes over us. Vines with greenish-white flowers cling to half-broken stone arches. The last time I went to London, I was 10 years old, before the Fey invasion. Mom and I stayed for a week in a house Walter owned. I didn't see much of the city then. There were lots of parties at the mansion, and I remember adults sleeping all over the house, on floors and sofas, with empty alcohol bottles and smoldering cigarettes all around. I only saw a few glimpses of London, on the way to and from the airport. Now, finally, I get to see some of the ancient city. The Tower of London, the River Thames, and a pub called The Hung, Drawn, and Quartered, named after a nearby execution spot. From one of the stone arches, Rhythe paces out onto the grass.
"Tonight," he bellows, "your task is to steal a replica of Excalibur, hidden somewhere in this part of London. Perhaps by the tower, perhaps by the river, maybe in the river. Like a true mission, the details are sparse, but there are few contacts spread throughout the city with information. There might also be unknowing participants who have their own knowledge to share. The usual rules of the city apply, and no one may carry weapons. This isn't about brute force. This is about cunning."
He turns and paces.
"And of course, only one of you will find the hidden Excalibur. Whoever does will have a strong shot at a gold or silver talk. Perhaps none of you will find it. In any case, we will score you according to your individual achievements, as poor as they might be."
He shoots me a sharp look.
"Could he be any more patronizing?" Serana whispers.
I'm about to answer when I notice someone in the shadows. The cherry-haired woman I've seen before in Avalon Tower. The other sentinel, Naveen. What's she doing here?
"The trial will begin in 15 minutes, Rhythe says. "Those of you who are capable of independent thought, best use this time to plan."
Almost instantly, we form into small groups. Serana, Tana, Darius, and I walk into the shadows of the vestry, one with stone walls, gothic windows, and no roof. Here we have a little privacy. Vines climb the walls, and moonlight streams down over us. I peer through one of the glassless windows to see Tarquin, Horatio, and three of their closest hangers-on huddling together in the grassy nave. Wisps of fog waft through the air. Rhythe walks by the Pendragon crowd and whispers to Tarquin. In response, Tarquin smiles and nods. My mouth drops open. I think Rhythe just tipped off Tarquin.
"Of course," Serana mutters.
"The Pendragons don't get gold talks through skill, but we need to actually come up with a plan."
"Yeah,"
Darius sounds listless. "Ever since Nolan's death, he's hardly talked. He doesn't seem to care about the trials or anything else anymore."
"Tana," I say, "have you foreseen anything? Any thoughts?"
Tana shakes her head.
"There's something misty about the trial. Foggy. I can't really see it, but I can feel it. I can't say if it's real or magically created."
"Okay, London's often foggy, isn't it?"
"And there's a big fucking steam fair nearby," says Serana. "There are rides and weird arcades all around Tower Green. I'm sure Rhythe planned this with as much chaos in mind as possible."
A flash of red catches my eye, and I turn to see Naveen staring at me from an arched doorway. She jerks her head, motioning for me to join her, then slinks back into the shadows on the other side of the nave.
"Give me a second," I say. "I'll be right back."
"What?"
Serana grabs my arm. Nia, the trial is about to start. We need to plan. Just a few minutes. I give her an apologetic look. Start without me. I slip away, weaving between the groups of cadets gathered under the moonlight. I spot her scarlet hair and follow her into a leafy, derelict tower. My heart pounds. This is insane. My first trial is about to start, and everything depends on me passing it. I can't waste my time on whatever this is. What am I doing here? She turns to face me, her jade eyes piercing in the dark. Hello, Nia. She leans back against a wall, arms folded, scrutinizing me. Her gaze is impenetrable and unblinking. Up close, I can see that a long, faded scar runs down her left cheek. A teardrop pendant hangs around her throat. Hi, I say. Standing close to her, I feel the tug between us grow even stronger. You're Naveen, right? The other sentinel.
That's right.
Her voice is soft and sad.
The other sentinel.
It's nice to finally meet you, but this isn't a good time, I say. The shadow trial is about to start, and if I fail this...
I need your help now. The lives of all the people here are at stake.
I blink. What are you talking about?
All this time, you've been training to be an agent of Camelot, she says. To go beyond the veil into Fae France. To spy on Oberon's forces. But surely you realize there's a second side to that coin.
It takes me a second to catch up.
Yeah.
My voice cracks, just a bit. While we're spying on Oberon's Fae, they're spying on us.
Precisely, she nods. Fae spies, saboteurs, and assassins. There's a war going on, and it takes place on both sides of the veil. You were the target of such an operative, right?
A veil mage broke into my room, I say. He tried to kill me. She uncrosses her arms and steps forward.
And now another of Oberon's veil mages is here, right now. I've felt him, somewhere nearby, just 10 minutes ago. Oberon's spies must have found out about this trial. Really, it's a priceless opportunity for the Fae. All of Avalon Tower's cadets in one place, and many of the knights too. And what's worse, they're about to split up. A skilled assassin would be able to take them out one by one.
If that's true, we have to stop the trial, I say. We need to tell them... She lets out a short, bitter laugh.
If only. Do you think I haven't tried that?
Then why is the trial continuing?
Avalon Tower is weighted down by protocol and politics. I know you've noticed that.
Naveen looks at the huddled cadets.
I've never been very good at convincing anyone of anything. That was my sister's skill.
I noticed the past tense. Was she at Avalon Tower too?
Her name was Alex.
The name sparks a memory.
She was the other sentinel. The one who died.
Yeah. Naveen's voice turns to a whisper.
I never realized how good she was at what we did until she was gone.
Disrupting the veil?
Being a sentinel is about more than disrupting the veil, Nia. Mi'ai 13 sentinels were always in charge of watching, keeping everyone safe. Disrupting the veil is just a tiny aspect of that. And when we needed to raise the alarm, it was Alex's job to persuade the knights. I'm not good with politics, and Rhythe bloody hates me. When I tried to warn him about this, he didn't listen.
Raphael would listen?
Raphael isn't here right now, and he doesn't always listen either. Anyway, Rhythe is a stubborn asshole.
Naveen purses her lips.
The time for convincing is over. You and I are sentinels, and we need to act. I can't stop this on my own. In a few minutes, the trial will start, and all these cadets will spread out, becoming targets. The Veil Mage will begin to strike.
I swallow. What do you need me to do?
Our powers will help us track him down. I recall the hum when the previous Veil Mage struck at me and nod. We should split up and find him. You check out the steam fair. I'll cover as much ground as possible north of here. If you spot him, do not engage. If he's cornered, he'll summon the Veil to cause a diversion. In the middle of London, that would be a disaster. Hundreds of deaths. Take this.
She hands me a tiny conch shell.
What's that? Do you remember microphones and earbuds before the war? This is the Fae equivalent. It'll let us communicate. Put it in your ear.
I remember Bluetooth earbuds. They were quite comfortable. This is the exact opposite. It scratches my ear when I put it in, and I have to shove it hard for it to stay. Arg, couldn't the Fae put rubber around it? Seriously.
It'll do, she says.
And as she speaks, I hear her voice from the conch as well. a strange echo in my ear.
Go, start the trial. Look for the Veil Mage as you go, and if you spot him, let me know. We'll figure it out from there.
Okay. She pivots and strides through the peaked tower doorway and into the shadows. Her voice whispers through the magical conch shell in my ear.
Good luck, Nia.
Chapter 34. No matter what Naveen said, I must try to stop the trial from taking place. If Avalon Tower postpones the trial by even one day, Oberon's operation will fail tonight. As I march straight to Ryth, the night breeze rushes over me. Ryth is staring at his pocket watch, standing alone on the dark grass. His bored expression quickly changes to annoyance when he notices me.
You have 3 more minutes, Ms. Melisande. I realize that your chances of passing are minimal, but surely you want to appear to be making an effort.
I lean in close. Naveen, the other sentinel, believes there might be an enemy assassin here, I tell him. Oberon's forces know that the trial is taking place, and they're using the opportunity to pick off the cadets. He stares at me, and a line forms between his eyebrows.
You must know that one of their Veil Mages already tried to take me out in Avalon Tower, I continue. They're on the attack. Surely the word of an experienced sentinel is worth checking out.
Something is worth checking out,
he finally says. I exhale in relief.
Good.
It's worth checking how you've come so far, seeing that you're so desperate to avoid this trial that you're willing to invent a ridiculous threat. Do you realize how dangerous it is to spread disinformation like this?
Irritation flares. I just spoke to Naveen.
Nonsense, he barks. I am the Seneschal, and I should fail you right now for this attempt to disrupt the trial. I will give you 1 more chance, but don't come to me with this codswallop again.
I know I'm just a cadet, but Naveen isn't. Are you really going to risk the lives of all these cadets just because you're too arrogant to listen? I blurt. A second later, I realize how loudly I've spoken. Silence settles around us. Serana and Tana both look at me, mouth ajar in horror.
Oh, Ms. Melisande,
Ryth whispers.
You'll regret saying that. You are done. Participate or not, it's all the same to me. Tonight, after this trial, I will see to it that you're expelled.
My jaw drops and I back away. I can hardly breathe. Ryth turns to the rest of the cadets.
What are you staring at?
He snaps.
The trial has begun. Get going.
The cadets rush out of the church ruins, slipping into the city streets. Tana, Serana, and Darius stay behind. And Ryth, of course, who retreats to a stone wall to fold his arms and scowl. My lungs feel tight as I walk toward my friends in the vestry. I pull out my inhaler and take 2 puffs. Did he just expel you? Serana asks me. He certainly threatened it. I feel sick. But believe it or not, there are more important things happening right now. If Naveen is right, the rest of the cadets are still in mortal danger, including my friends. On top of that, this attack would virtually destroy the future of MI-13. I force myself to focus. Forget Ryth. I need your help, and I need you to trust me. Naveen just told me there's another Veil Mage here, like the one who tried to kill me, and he's here to take us all down. I quickly explain the rest, and my friends listen in shocked silence. Just as I'm finishing, there's a whisper from the conch shell, and I lift a finger to my ear. Nia, Naveen says, I'm heading to Whitechapel. What's the fair looking like? I clear my throat, touching the conch. I'm still at the church.
Why are you still there? The Veil Mage wasn't there. I'm not trying to be rude, but are you thick?
Naveen asks. Her tone is sharp and judgmental, and I'm quickly catching on to what she meant when she said she's not good with politics. Hang on a second, Naveen. I look at my friends. I have to go, but I need your help. Can you get Raphael or someone else from Avalon Tower over here? He was on the boat with us when we came to London. I know this is a lot to ask when we have a trial going on, but if the other sentinel is right, we're in deep trouble. How are we supposed to find him? Serana asks. I've no idea where he is. I think about it quickly. Most of the knights will be at St. Catherine Docks, where the boat came in. Possibly Westminster or Downing Street? My mind whirls. Or that secret weapons store where MI-13 gets its supplies on Artillery Lane. I look at Tana. Okay, there are several possibilities, but try to find them however you can. Tea, tarot, whatever works. Maybe split up to cover more ground?
Just please, go as quickly as possible.
What are you going to do? Serana asks. Naveen and I can sense veil magicians, I say.
I'm going to help her find him. Hurry.
I start walking, glancing back at them as I do. We don't have much time. I speed out of the derelict churchyard and head along a curving road that leads to the tower. Wisps of fog coil past me. I pass a pub with warm lights, steamed windows, and the chatter of people drinking inside. I break into a jog over a flagstone pavement until the steam fair comes into view. Fog hangs over the brightly colored rides. Since modern technology stopped working, we've gone back to some of the more old-fashioned pleasures. Steam fairs, carriage rides with horses, steamships. In fact, if Wraith expels me, I'll be heading back to the U.S. on one of those pretty soon. A group of men are walking past a merry-go-round, drinking beer from plastic cups. As I pass, one of them stumbles into me. He says something to me, something about giving him a smile, but I can hardly hear over his screaming thoughts. I want to rub my face in her tits. I glower at him. Fuck off.
What did I do?
Naveen asks in my ear.
Not you.
It's crowded here, and I can smell the beer coming off everyone. My telepathic powers flare, and I worry it will make it hard to hear the veil magic. I walk past a ride made to look like swinging ships, trying to smother my telepathy as people brush past me and summon the threads of my sentinel powers, listening for the quiet hum of the veil magician. Stopping at a stall, I buy a pint of beer. If I'm going to blend in here, it seems necessary. With my beer in hand, I slip into the crowd. I'm at the steam fair by the tower, I tell Naveen. Nothing yet. Lights flash around me, and shouts pierce the air.
Okay,
she says, her voice vibrating strangely in my ear.
I'm nearly at Brick Lane. Nothing here yet.
From how far away do you think we can sense him?
Depends how trained you are.
I can probably sense him from a few hundred yards, but you? 20-30 yards tops.
There's that bad at politics thing again.
But I think she's also right. Even when I'm near the veil itself, I don't hear the buzz until I'm a few dozen yards away. And with everyone drunkenly shouting around me, I can hardly think straight. An enormous pipe organ is shrieking to my left, while on my right, a loud machine is emitting a stream of pink steam with an ear-shattering hiss. On top of that, Naveen is whispering in my ear, demanding that I walk faster, concentrate, tell her as soon as I sense anything, wanting to know why I haven't found him yet, and
it's there and gone. Just a hiss, a murmur, so weak that I sense it more than I hear it. But it's familiar and resonates with my magic. The hum of a veil. Somewhere to my right, already dissipating. I push my way in the direction I think it came from and move through the fair closer to the river. As I nudge against a large man, I get a glimpse into his thoughts. Something about a cuckoo clock he wishes he hadn't bought. I push his voice away, trying to suppress my telepathy while letting my sentinel power grow. Tuning out the distractions feels impossible, like trying to thread a needle while jumping rope. But there, that hum again. Just a hint, but this time it's more constant. I can follow it through the crowd.
Cheer up, love, a man shouts at me. Might never happen.
I'm already past him, by the riverwalk now. There are no more rides here, but stalls of people sell fish and chips and pies. I know he's somewhere down here by the dark, glittering Thames. Now the hum is getting louder in my ears.
Nia, I'm in Whitechapel, Naveen says. I think I'm going to turn around and...
I have him, I say breathlessly.
What? Where?
I catch my breath. It takes me a second to remember what this entrance to the tower is called. I'm at Trader's Gate by the tower. I can't see him yet, but I can definitely feel him. He's on the move, heading for Tower Bridge.
Bloody hell. I'm way too far north, Naveen says. Don't lose him, and no matter what, don't engage him. Wait for me, okay?
Got it. There are a ton of people on the riverside walk, and I scan them as I move, assessing each person for risks, details, pieces of information. A policeman saunters over the cobblestones, looking unconcerned. A couple is making out against a tree, and a man is trying to jog, but somehow going the same pace as everyone walking. Then I see him. He stands out because of his clothes and his height. He wears a hoodie that shadows his face and black pants. All black, just like the other veil magician I encountered. Not different enough from other bystanders to draw attention, unless someone's looking. Now that I've spotted him, the hum grows louder.
Just as he glances over his shoulder, I slip behind the slow jogger, sticking to the shadows. As I do, I realize the Veil Mage has doubled back and is heading into the thick of the fair. It's hard following someone alone. Usually when tracking a person, you do it with a team. Then you can break away as someone else switches with you. Have enough people working together, and your target never realizes he's being followed at all. But when doing it alone, I have to improvise. Let the target get out of sight constantly. Do my best to camouflage myself in the crowd, sipping my beer like I'm just another drunk person. My one advantage is that even though I can't see him, I can still hear him humming in my ear, the buzz over my skin. I whisper updates to Naveen, telling her each ride and stall that I pass. She's on her way, trying to get a taxi to get here faster. She keeps telling me not to engage him, repeating the admonition so many times that I wish the conch shell had a mute button. But I can still hear him. He's moving to the outskirts of the fair, heading north. He hurries past the rides, but he's still close. I think the humming is coming from a stone and brick church. A blue sign marks it as All Hallows by the Tower, founded 675. I think the hum is coming from there, but Naveen isn't here yet. I'm standing at the edge of the fair, just before a stall with a horseshoes game and prizes of creepy eyeless dolls. While I pretend to be interested in the stall, I keep my focus on the hum behind me, making sure that it doesn't shift. It's a tricky thing to do, like trying to taste music or listen to the sunlight. Sentinel magic isn't supposed to be used to track a person, but as far as I can tell, he's still there, inside the ancient church. I smile at the stallkeeper, a balding man in a tracksuit, and pay for a single ticket.
There you are, love.
He hands me three iron horseshoes. When I touch them, if I focus very hard, I can feel a faint tingle on my fingertips. But since I'm not fully fey, it's barely noticeable. I'm totally gonna win this thing, I say. I have no doubts. My first horseshoe goes way off mark. Damn it, I was so close.
All in the wrist, darling.
Hey, do you think that old church is open? Do they have bathrooms?
Bathrooms? He repeats.
Toilets, the loo, I have to pee, and I hate the port-a-loos. I toss the second horseshoe, a bit closer, but still way off.
No idea, really. Not sure I've ever been in a church. Not my thing. Pretty sure they close at night.
Have you seen anyone going in there? I ask.
Nah, looks dark, he says skeptically. Not recently, anyway.
I still hear the buzz coming from that church. I toss the third horseshoe, and it's so off the mark that it nearly hits one of the eyeless dolls. Ugh, I really want to win one. Give me another try. I pay for another ticket. He hands me three more horseshoes.
I'm sure this time you'll get it. You're definitely getting the hang of it, darling.
I know, right? I toss the first one, nearly taking his head off.
Church was open earlier, though. I saw people going in. Not being funny or nothing, and I'm not prejudiced. Nothing against Dimai Fae. But they're just not right, you know? They just didn't look right.
It's the eyes. The large man grimaces.
Feel like they're gonna steal my soul. Creepy fuckers.
Wow. Dimai Fae? I've never seen one. What do they look like?
Fucking weird, pardon my language. The man had pointy ears, obviously. Dark hair. Tattoos on his arms. Eerie silver eyes like metal. Beautiful blonde woman with him. You know, I don't mind the women Dimai Fae quite as much. I'd give her one, he says thoughtfully. Pardon the expression.
I toss a horseshoe, and it clatters to the floor of his stall. A thought starts to blossom in my mind. Did they have anything with them? He shrugs.
I don't know. Why'd you ask?
I open my eyes wide. Well, like you said, they're dangerous, and you know the saying, if you see something, say something. He holds up a finger.
Do you know what, love? The fellow was carrying something. It was in a box, like a musical instrument or something. They never brought it out again.
His eyes widen.
Do you think they could be planning something? You don't think it was a bomb, do you?
He scrubs a hand over his mouth.
With all these people here? Should I call the police?
I toss both horseshoes one after the other, so off the mark that one nearly hits one of the prize dolls. It's probably nothing. I doubt Dimai Fae even know how to make a bomb. We don't want the police shutting the whole fair down over an empty box. What I know at this point is that Raphael and Vivienne came in earlier and left a package here, then left. the Excalibur replica. The Veil Mage's plan starts to crystallize in my mind. This is where the trial ends. The Veil Magician figured that out. Why chase people through the street when they're all going to come to the same place? I casually lean on the side of the stall and glance back at the darkened church. Then my heart sinks. Across the street, I see Tarquin and Horatio peering in the entrance to a building. Rythe must have tipped them off to the general location, but they don't know the exact building yet. A teeny tiny part of me thinks it would be tempting to let them blunder into the trap. But as much as I hate them, I'm not going to let Avalon Tower cadets die at the hands of our enemies. "Naveen, where are you?" I whisper. "The bloody cab driver went the wrong way," she shouts. "Will you fucking turn around, you absolute muppet?" "Not you, Nia, the cabbie. No, I will not pipe down." "I can't wait, Naveen." "What? Wait, Nia." I pull the conch shell from my ear and pocket it.
"Third time lucky," the stall owner hands me the horseshoes.
"Sure, why not?" I take them and quickly toss them again. Two land right on target, cluttering as they clunk together.
"Bloody hell, how did you do that?"
"I must have got the hang of it." He goes over to pick them up, then looks around for the third one. "Listen, mate," I say, leaning into a whisper. "Can you do me a favor? See those two guys over there?" I point at Tarquin and his friend. "They're students, I know, and I want to prank them." I pull two 20-pound notes out of my pocket and slide them onto the counter. "I'm gonna hide. Can you call them over? Act as if you have something important to tell them." He pockets the cash.
"What do you want me to say?"
"Tell them you've got King Arthur's sword. You know, Excalibur." He raises an eyebrow.
"I don't get it."
"It's an inside joke. Ask them to guess a password, and if they get the password right, they get Excalibur."
I slide another 20-pound note onto the counter.
"It'll be hilarious, trust me. Give them the doll I just won. Tell them it's a clue. All I need is 5 minutes, okay? Just buy me 5 minutes."
He shrugs and stuffs the third 20 into his pocket. Tana had insisted we all bring cash for bribing, and she was, as usual, correct.
"Happy to oblige."
I race around the church to the entrance at the other side, my feet pounding over the flagstones. As I run, I hear the stall owner calling Tarquin and Horatio. I find the arched stone doorway and push inside. The Veil Magician left it unlocked. He didn't want any cadets to get lost, of course. It's dark as I enter, but the hum of his magic fills the air around me. Chapter 35. My heart batters my ribs as my eyes slowly adjust to the pale moonlight streaming in through stained glass windows. "Did I win?" My voice echoes off the high stone ceiling. "Did I get here first?" He steps into the aisle, his golden eyes glowing. As my eyes adjust, I can see the smile on his lips. He thinks I'm his first prey of the day, a dumb cadet jumping headfirst into the trap. I take two steps toward him. "Do you have the sword?" I ask eagerly. "Do I need to, like, give you a password or something?" He's holding the Excalibur replica, but not handing it to me. Instead, he raises his hand and whispers an incantation. The hum intensifies as tendrils of veil shimmer into existence around me. But I've been expecting it. Unleashing my banked powers, I lash out at the newly formed veil, shattering it. The hum goes silent, and the Veil Magician stumbles, shocked. He drops the sword, and it clatters to the stone floor. I lunge for him, gripping the horseshoe that I'd palmed a few minutes ago, and smash him in the nose, hearing the crunch of bone. He shrieks, the sound echoing off the towering vaults, and stumbles back, still screaming. The air smells of burned flesh. I am so glad I don't have that reaction to iron. Without wasting another breath, I rush for him and press the horseshoe onto his neck. He screeches, trying to pull my hand away in panic, but I only press harder. With the metal on his skin, he's growing weaker. He falls into the aisle. I leap on top of him, shoving the iron against his face. A disturbing, sizzling sound rises from his skin, and I ignore the growing nausea in my gut. We keep struggling. He never stops screaming, scratching ineffectively at my face and hands. My jaws are clenched in fury, my arm trembling with effort. And then it goes still. His arms drop, and the screaming stops. Is he faking it? If I release him, will he leap up and stab me? Wheezing,
I keep the iron pressed against him, grinding that horseshoe into his face. Is he breathing? The wood door slams open behind me, and powerful hands lift me off the mage. I whirl, ready to strike with the horseshoe again, and see Raphael's beautiful face staring down at me. He grabs my horseshoe-wielding arm, stopping me from battering him with it.
Take it easy, he says. I don't think he's getting up again, and I'd rather not get smashed with that.
I let out a shuddering breath, suddenly dizzy. Raphael slips his arm around my waist to steady me. Naveen rushes in at last, her scarlet hair damp with sweat. Chest heaving, she runs down the aisle and crouches by the veil magician.
Definitely dead, she says after a moment. I feel sick to my stomach.
Somewhere in the back of my mind, I realize that I've taken a life for the very first time. I had to do it, of course, but it feels as if I've taken a step over a threshold I never imagined myself crossing. Writhe steps into the nave.
What is this?
His voice echoes off of the stone arches.
You should have listened to me, Naveen pants, still catching her breath.
She must have jumped out of the cab at some point and just sprinted here.
Tarquin appears in the church doorway.
She bribed someone to distract us. That's not allowed, is it? Bloody bribery.
Raphael turns to face him.
Piss off, Tarquin. You're not needed here. I want credit for getting here first, Tarquin shouts.
Naveen turns around and slams the door in Tarquin's face, a muffled yelp accompanying the loud thud. Raphael abruptly pulls his arms from me and rakes a hand through his hair. The moonlight casts a silver glow over his perfect features, sparking in his eyes.
Report, Melisande.
It's been 6 months since he'd first demanded my report back on the ship with the refugees. I still remember the muddled report I gave him back then, and he still makes me feel a surge of confusing emotions, especially since he's gone into night mode, calling me Melisande. Of course, I knew he was like this, didn't I? I managed to recount the events that led to this moment with all the relevant details. As I go through it, Naveen, Writhe, and Raphael listen without saying a word. When I'm finally done, Raphael turns to Writhe.
Well?
Writhe looks at him with disdain.
Well, what? Nia and Naveen warned you that the trial was a trap. Why didn't you postpone it? They gave no evidence. I can't entertain every hysterical worry that goes through someone's head just because they sense something. My wife senses impending doom 10 times a day. She sensed that she was having a heart attack yesterday, and you know what it was? Nerves. That's all. 10 hours in the emergency room for her nerves. And you know what else? It was completely outrageous for Miss Melisande to take him on without a knight. As soon as she saw the Veil Magician, she should have turned back and found someone more experienced. Then, with actual proof, with data, I would have cancelled the trial. We could have captured this assassin and interrogated him instead of just killing him. But she went after him alone, risking the lives of everyone involved, in the desperate hope that I would revoke her expulsion. And now, a valuable source of intel is dead.
You gibbering wankstain,
mutters Naveen, low enough that I can just barely hear it.
Her expulsion?
Raphael repeats in a low, incredulous voice. Writhe narrows his eyes at me.
I intend to kick her out of Avalon Tower for insubordination, and I'm still fairly certain it's the right call. But I suspect the other knights of the Round Table will be difficult about it, and given the circumstances, I'm willing to give her one final chance.
I reach down and pluck the replica sword from the stone floor. If I had Naveen's knack for politics, I would tell Writhe what I really thought of him. Instead, I give him a curt nod. Cheers, then.
We will obviously need to reschedule the shadow trial.
Writhe sighs.
Miss Melisande can do it properly with the rest of the cadets. No,
Raphael says. Writhe frowns at him.
Right. You think she should be expelled after all? She won't do the shadow trial again. She's shown her leadership by sending cadets to call for backup,
Raphael says.
She followed an enemy agent through the fair without being noticed. Then she managed to delay 2 Pendragon cadets and arm herself with an improvised weapon. She finally ambushed a powerful enemy agent and took him down. Not to mention that she got her hands on the Excalibur replica, which was the trial's goal, one that's supposed to guarantee the highest marks. She not only passed the trial, she deserves the highest score for it, according to the rules we set out.
Rive lifts his chin.
I recognize that you are a knight of the round table, but this is obvious favoritism. What exactly is the source of this favoritism, I wonder?
I'm sure you will agree, Raphael adds smoothly, that when we report this to the rest of the knights at the round table, we can leave out the part where both sentinels tried to warn you about the assassin, and you dismissed them as hysterical women because you were annoyed with your wife.
Rive clenches his jaw in fury. Finally, he says, if she hadn't maliciously bribed someone to waylay Tarquin, he would have arrived here first. At the very least, he deserves the highest score as well, a tie.
Raphael lets out an exasperated sigh.
Fine.
Tana, Darius, and Serana should be given a high score too, I say. They managed to get the backup we needed.
Rive frowns at me. I'm willing to give them a passing grade, but this isn't a free-for-all, Miss Melisande. We have protocols and procedures in Avalon Tower. Protocols decided at the Sacred Round Table.
Bunch of bollocks, Naveen says. Bollocks, bollocks, bollocks.
Passing scores will be fine.
Raphael intervenes, giving us both a warning glare.
I'll see if they want to retake the trial, or if they're fine with a passing grade. And that's it. We're done here. We are done here, Mr. Lancelot,
Rive says.
But we're not done with the trials. In time, no doubt. We will see who truly belongs here and who does not.
Chapter 36. I walk down a stone tunnel toward the night riding court, Tana by my side. Her mouth is set in a grim line, and she seems on edge.
Neither of us can get called, you know, she says, glancing at me. I'm certain now that we both have an important role to play.
I swallow hard. I don't doubt it. We'll be fine. Let's just get through this trial. The tunnel runs below the spectator stands. Once, the knights of the Round Table would have ridden their horses through this tunnel on their way to strike each other with lances. Arthur himself probably traveled through this exact passage. But Arthur, I'm sure, felt much more confident than I do now. For the past several days, we've been watching combat trials, and they all seemed so skilled, so brutal. We're both in hard leather armor, reinforced with chainmail beneath it, and it weighs me down as I walk, pressing on my shoulders and chest. Today, it's me against Tana. The only thing making this bearable is that she was matched with me. Probably because we're both small, unskilled, mediocre fighters compared to the rest. We step out of the tunnel into the sandy arena, and the bright sun hits my face. It's September, but it still feels a million degrees in this leather and armor, and I'm already sweating. I glance at Tana, and she smiles at me. Hopefully after watching our duel for 10 or 20 minutes, the judges will be so bored they'll end it out of sheer tedium. The wind whips at my hair, and my nerves spark. The spectators in the stands are watching us intently. Since I got the replica Excalibur, they're all paying very close attention to me. I don't like being the center of attention, and my pulse races. Raphael is in the stands. He's watching me too, his jaw clenched tightly. We'll do fine, I tell Tana, more to reassure myself.
Yeah, sure.
Her voice wavers, and I can hear the worry laden in her voice.
Let's just get through.
She trails off, her gaze going unfocused.
What? You can't do this at the last minute.
Do what? I look around, trying to see what has upset her, but everything seems normal. The judges on their platform, the spectators in the stands. She blinks, frowning in confusion.
I thought, never mind.
I'm about to ask her what she thought she saw, but Amon calls for everyone's attention from the platform.
Today's trial by combat will be between Nia Melisande and Tana Campbell. We will start in...
Rive suddenly leans in and whispers something in his ear. Amon turns to him and shakes his head. Vivian stands looking furious. Amon mostly seems confused.
What's going on? I ask Tana. Nothing good, Tana says.
Now Amon is nodding, his face dejected. Rive folds his hands at his waist, looking pleased with himself.
There's been a change in today's trial,
Amon calls out.
Apparently, Tana Campbell's psychic abilities are urgently required on a mission.
So today's trial by combat will be between Nia Melisande and Tarquin Pendragon.
My stomach plummets. What? You can't do this at the last minute? Tana calls out.
Tana Campbell, writhe bellows. That is an order.
My heart races. When I turn to look behind me, I see Tarquin already moving through the crowd, prepared with his sword. He knew this was happening, and Writhe still waited until the last minute to announce the change. This is bullshit, I mutter. The last time Tarquin and I fought, he had me pinned within moments. He's bigger than me, stronger than me, faster than me, and he's been training since he could walk. He's also wielding a long, heavy sword, which I can't parry properly with my flimsy rapier. I am utterly fucked. Tana grips my arm hard.
Nia, remember, you have to pass.
How?
Use everything you've got, she says.
Her suggestion echoes Vivienne's instructions so similarly that a chill runs up the back of my neck. She pivots and stalks out of the arena, back into the tunnel. Off on a bullshit mission that I'm sure Writhe made up to fuck with me. I'm left standing by myself in the old tilt yard, sweating into my clothes. My breath feels short and sharp, and I wonder how much blood Arthur spilled on this sand. Slowly, with a thin smile, Tarquin stalks in front of me. He closes the distance between us and leans down to whisper,
"Ah, the public bus."
His voice is low, so only I can hear.
Remember what Horatio did in his trials? I'm going to do so much worse. A sacrifice to Arthur. Nia, you were never meant to be here.
My thoughts go quiet, and I keep my face inscrutable as I glance at his sword. Sure, the blade is dulled for the trial, but like Horatio's weapon from that first trial, it's heavy enough to kill, and I have no doubt that is Tarquin's plan. This is no longer about just passing the test. This is about survival, and I can't pull any punches.
Begin,
Aemon shouts. I leap forward and thrust my rapier at his face, aiming for his eyes. He stumbles back, but manages to parry my thrust, nearly pulling the rapier from my hand. Quickly, he pushes with a swing at my body that I barely dodge. Both of us take a step back and scrutinize each other. I can see the tiniest hint of surprise in his eyes. He goes at me with half a dozen swings and thrusts. I dodge them, jumping back each time. But he's hardly making any effort, and I'm already out of breath. I used my inhaler before starting, but it isn't enough to get me through the immense effort of this trial. I can't go on leaping around like this without getting completely winded. When he thrusts again, I parry with my knife. But as I do, it's torn from my hand, spiraling out of reach. Fuck. He swings, and I manage to duck. From below, I strike upward, aiming for his face. But now he's ready, and smashes his sword's pommel into my shoulder. I grunt and stumble back, barely dodging his next swing. He's already figured out how to predict my moves.